Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of Star Trek Picard. Now, before we get into the spoilers, I do want to let you know of an offer that's been made by... It was announced by Patrick Stewart.
Yes.
So it's official. It's from CBS All Access. You can get free access to CBS All Access for... I'm not sure exactly how long. I didn't look at the details of it.
Well, it seemed to be at least a 30-day free access, and it didn't seem to be to all of CBS All Access, but to let you view Picard through CBS All Access.
Yeah, you can definitely get Picard. You might be able to get one or two of the other Trek shows. I don't know the scope of it. The offer is good until April 23rd, and the code to use is the word GIFT, G-I-F-T. In all caps, and not that I think that matters, but basically, you know, given the turbulent times we're having these days, they thought that would be a good thing to help get people's mind off it and stuff like that. So I figured we'd start with that in case you haven't watched the 10-episode season and you're finding yourself at home with a little bit of spare time. Feel free to stop this episode now, go watch the 10 episodes and come back, or continue listening. That's fine too. But I just wanted to get the word out there before we got started. So we've watched all 10 episodes.
And we read the book that was the prequel.
We read the Star Trek Picard, The Last Best Hope novel. Did an episode on that. I read the 3-issue Star Trek Picard Countdown comic book series that was also a prequel to it. Couldn't quite tell where that fit in with the book, but okay, whatever. And I've got kind of mixed feelings on this show.
For me, it was a very slow start.
I would say it was just very slow overall. Not in a horrible way, but it took them 3 or 4 episodes before they're even really on the ship going out and doing stuff.
Yeah. Well, and there were several things that it seemed like maybe this is what we're going to discover or deal with that just kind of got dropped.
Yeah, I think for me, what sets this aside from most of the other Star Trek shows, other than Discovery, is it is a serial narrative.
Mm-hmm.
We've got one story that starts at the beginning and goes through the 10 episodes. Some episodes have a little bit more of a beginning, middle, and end in and of themselves, but they're not a contained episode like Next Generation was.
Yeah, definitely.
So I would say we really got 3 eras of Star Trek shows. The original stuff, the next gen through Voyager and Enterprise kind of era, and then the modern era of Discovery and Picard. And the modern ones, again, serial narrative, the others were all episodic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but it was a slow narrative to get started. There were a lot of things that were just doled out with you could have moved a little faster on this.
Well, it was hard to tell, were we going to explore why synths were outlawed.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that being what happened with the synths on Mars?
Yeah, we got a tease that something was downloaded and set them awry, but we never got that question answered.
I mean, we got strong implications that maybe it was the Romulans.
Yeah, I guess they hinted enough and spelled that out enough that I guess it was that. But even if they answered the question, I wasn't satisfied with the answer.
That's where I was at. I didn't feel they gave us enough to be positive it was the Romulans, or to be positive that it was basically the Romulans going for the self-fulfilling prophecy.
I think it was the Romulans, but I was never satisfied as to how they were able to do it.
How or why or enough details.
Yeah, the mechanics of it. There was another flashback episode to be had, I think.
Yeah. We also had, and it came, I think, as much from the book as from this, the implication that the sun for the Romulans that was going supernova had nefarious, it wasn't
right. Natural. That was,
I think
that was from the books. I'm trying to remember if they touched on that here. But that may not have been a natural cause and stuff. But yeah, nothing. The whole Romulan evacuation thing, I was almost thinking we could have gotten a flashback episode on key parts of that.
I mean, it got touched on when we went and got Elnor. And I love Elnor.
Yeah, but I would have liked to have seen another episode that really showed Raffi and Picard's relationship from that era.
Yeah.
Because I think that fell flat a little bit. I mean, for me, that was established in the comic.
For me, it was established in the book, and the Raffi we had here really wasn't the Raffi we had in the book.
Yeah, and I guess for me, in the comic, which was almost like an hour-long Trek episode sort of story, you got the relationship in a day-to-day for an adventure versus in the book, which spanned so much time,
mm-hmm.
that you got snippets, but not how do they really interact on a daily basis.
Well, but we really didn't get enough to explain how Raffi went from being a cream of the crop officer to being a living in RV off the grid in the middle of the desert doing drugs.
Substance abuse and stuff like that, yeah.
Down our luck.
Never having patched the relationship with her husband and kid.
Yeah.
Well, and there's an aspect of this where the using of drugs, the profanity, and things like that were aspects that were very much front and center here.
Yes.
Which, if you go back to Encounter at Farpoint, the pilot episode for Next Generation, we're told humanity has advanced beyond this.
Yes.
You know? And then you go to the novel, and you've got the racism towards the Romulans in the novel and in this show. That sort of attitude towards synthetics.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like all of the utopia aspects that Roddenberry had envisioned for Trek
had fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, this writing crew decided, no, let's dirty it up a little and I don't say get real.
But yeah.
That's what I feel they thought they were trying to do. And that annoyed me a bit. Particularly, I mean, if they wanted to do that with Trek, I think there are ways they could have done that. It worked a little better in Discovery to have less perfect Starfleet officers because it was earlier.
Mm.
Before even Kirk and stuff. Okay, I'll give a little leeway there. They just hadn't gotten that far.
Yes.
Another 100 years or whatever, you get to Picard's time or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, if you had taken this and done a jump forward in time to where the Federation had fallen on hard times and had lost ground, that it eroded.
Yeah.
But 10, 20 years since the last time we've seen some of these characters?
Yeah.
That's too far to have fallen too fast. And all of that, when near the end, because we just watched the two-part finale, when one of the characters is telling Picard, yeah, you want to stand up for the synths, but they didn't listen to you before, they're not going to listen to you now. And lo and behold, they do. Federation sends this huge fleet, probably bigger than any fleet we've seen pretty much ever, other than maybe the Battle of Wolf 9-5 or 5-9 or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
That didn't make sense to me. How could they have pulled a fleet together that quickly? How could they have gotten that person to command it? And why would they have done it just on his say-so, given the last conversations we'd seen between Picard and the commander-in-chief of Starfleet? It was a jump narratively that I don't feel they earned.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that bothered me a bit. I think there was, from a plot, tone, perspective, flaws in the story.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed it because I think they had some really great actors. I think they had some good material to work with on individual scenes. They realized a couple of characters fairly well. But then they went with a couple of moments where it's like, ooh, this is supposed to be how we think they're going to end it and stuff. It's like, yeah, there are certain things when I know you have a second season.
Yes.
You can't make me think you're going down a certain path.
Yeah.
Kind of, oh, the story's wrapping up. And no, it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's not even, oh, there's a different story to tell next time. It's, yeah, this was a season-long equivalent to Encounter at Farpoint in some ways. This is Picard's new crew and stuff.
Yeah.
On Rios's ship.
Yes.
But even some of that, the way they had the ship damaged and then miraculously repaired.
Well, and at the final scene, the crew we've pulled together at the end of the episode does and simultaneously does not make sense.
What I found lacking in this final episode was the emergency navigation hologram, yes, engineering hologram, all the other Rios-ish holograms. Because, I mean, there's like five characters right there.
Mm-hmm. And they were
dropped.
Yeah.
But the lineup we get here at the end was pretty much most of the characters we'd seen by the, I guess, third episode. Because, again, slow start. It took a few episodes before we got to see Rios.
I think it was longer than that till we saw Elnor.
You're right. It was four or five episodes at least.
Longer than that till we saw the one who was front left as we were looking at the two.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm not sure if that character is going to be recurring, regular, or what.
Strongly implied regular with the way they ended it.
Well, there was a character moment there between two characters that were like, and they're doing that. It's like, where the hell did that come from?
Yes.
There was a couple of let's build bonds between characters that wasn't a building of bonds, but oh, it's suddenly there.
Well, there were some that they started from early on. Rios and Jurati. They tried building that from early
Friendship,
on.
Friendship, yes, but to where it evolved to...
They were trying to build that from early on.
I don't think they did it well.
I don't feel they did it well, but I felt they were trying.
I didn't like the Jurati character. Rios I liked.
I felt that they were kind of schizophrenic with the Jurati character. In terms of, did she or did she not love Maddox?
From the books, clearly she did. Her book.
Yeah, but see, that was part of my problem.
But she definitely killed him.
Yes.
She definitely said she was willing to you know, pay penance for that and stuff like that. And they were going to take her to Starbase 12 or whatever. And that still seemed to be on the plan. But as of the end of the episode, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, so they were all over the board with her. Raffi got over her alcoholism and substance abuse suddenly.
Yeah, she seemed to rebound from that pretty well. She still had the vaping thing or whatever.
Mm.
So I didn't think she was totally over it, but the worst of it was behind her.
Yeah.
Magically.
And I will say at the very end when she was comforting Elnor over something, that made sense to me.
The minute we saw her, you know, with the sunset or whatever, it's like, I know which character's coming up. She's the mother who doesn't have the kid. Here's the kid who doesn't have the parental figure.
Yeah.
I see where they're going.
Yeah. So for me, that one worked because they'd done a good job of building. Well, he needed a mother. She'd done wrong by a son, but she wanted to be a mother.
It also sets up an interesting dynamic for a second season of Elnor having two parental figures who have worked together in a command situation between Raffi and Picard, that you've got a very bizarre familial structure there.
Yeah.
That you can see how they would have very different opinions when... If Elnor needs advice, he could get radically different ones from the mother who's trying to, you know, make good or whatever, and the somewhat distant father figure, if you know what I mean, emotionally. Well,
and the other thing there, though, is Picard understands how Elnor was raised.
Mm-hmm.
And while Raffi may have had almost as much exposure to it, she doesn't fully understand that unfiltered honesty.
Yes. It sets up good character dynamics for another season.
Yeah.
So I didn't object to that.
But I was shocked Soji was on the ship after the journey Soji had been through.
I was not, in so much as all of the synths are created in pairs. She lost her sibling, so she'd be odd person out down there.
But there was another one who looked an awful lot like her who had also lost her pair.
That was the mother figure who was kind of taken off stage, if you will. But there was also one character that was one of the synths that was killed, leaving another one there.
Yeah.
Which would have been interesting to have had on the ship as well.
Yeah.
But I think they'd spent so much time getting us invested in that character, that actress, that I expected the actress to continue with the show.
There was that, but I guess the way that they did... A lot of the scenes, they built Soji up to be the person with Data's understanding of humanity to bring back to what they jokingly referred to as Synthville.
Yeah, what bothered me there is they wound up having a simulation of Data So he was around, but we never saw him as a hologram. We never saw him interacting with the synth. We never saw him as the father figure.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they had somebody else acting in that role.
Yeah. Well, it was almost like Data was trapped inside a computer.
Yeah. He was stuck in the holodeck.
Yeah.
And that didn't make any sense to me. Well, particularly given that one of the synths could actually do a mind meld.
Yes.
I mean, I'm willing to, you know, Vulcans can do it because, well, they can do it. That's part of their premise. That's part of the pitch of them.
Well, and I'll attribute maybe a slight bit of telepathy, but organic to organic mind.
Well, and to me, it's something that they are establishing as Vulcans can do because there's something about physically being Vulcan that facilitates that.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying both organic and I assume a degree of telepathy or something.
Right, but biologically
yes.
Based.
Yes, okay.
We've never seen a human learn the Vulcan technique or a Betazoid or a Klingon or a Romulan or, you know, whatever. So to have a synthetic that's a engineered thing.
See, that's where
learn the technique.
What broke down for me though was inorganic, no telepathy. I couldn't understand. I mean, I would love to be able to put my hand on my computer and meld with it and have it magically do what I wish it was doing.
Let's go back to the inorganic stuff because Daj and Soshi were sophisticated enough to pass for organic.
Mm.
So you could argue a difference that makes no difference is no difference. However, the synth that did the mind meld had the Data-like eyes, the other skin. So to me, well, and was literally a generation earlier.
Yeah.
And if you had looked at Synthville or whatever, there were those that looked more Data-like and some that looked more organic.
Yeah.
So you figured there was constant evolution and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if it had been a up-to-date model, I could see, okay, they're organic enough, but then wouldn't have had time to learn the technique.
Yeah.
But they've had time to learn the technique magically, but it seems, again, like teaching somebody to do something that they don't have the biological components for. Those were the things that I felt what they were trying to do, they thought, ooh, this would be cool, or wouldn't it be neat if.
Mm-hmm.
They just fell flat but didn't work for me. I didn't think they sold the concept well.
Yeah.
Likewise, when we've got these orchid flying flower giant things.
I didn't understand that.
What the hell is that?
Inorganic life creating flying orchids.
I'm willing to say, okay, you want to create a synthetic butterfly or cat? Sure, have at it, whatever, don't care. But to now have something that's a synthetic flower, weird, giant size, even odder on a desert planet. And it can fly.
Into How? Space.
Into space, like a Venus flytrap around a ship and power it down. I mean,
yeah,
it made no sense. The only thing where they may have thought they set the stage for that was when we had heard from Rios about what had happened that had gotten him drummed out of Starfleet or whatever, involved, again, the sister to the synth that would do the mind meld and having been named after a flower. Okay, so in addition to being, you know, roboticists or syntheticists or whatever you would call them, they do the plant stuff on the side? They're botanists too?
I don't know.
I mean, these aren't fatal flaws. These aren't showstoppers, but they're ones where it made me think, really?
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is, if it had been and satellite is the wrong word, but a weapon that launched like a satellite, opened like a flower, and simply was beautiful in the way of a flower.
If it had been, here is something that is clearly an engineered starship, but they have taken the design aesthetic to a whole new level.
That would have worked for me.
Absolutely.
You know, because I can understand and I can see where synthetic life would be entranced by the beauty of nature.
Yes. If they had gone that route, I would have been happy with that.
And I'll admit, that's what I was first expecting when whoever was at the console at the time said, it's a flower. I was like, is this an engineered mechanical? It looks like a flower because they're so entranced by the beauty, because I'm like, that's kind of cool. And then I'm like, no, it's just a flower. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they literally, it's like, geez, how are we going to shoot this? I don't know. You know what? I was walking by a florist this morning and they had an orchid. Let's just do a close up on that.
Yeah.
And just mat it in. Yeah. There were aspects of the show where I feel they didn't have the same view of Star Trek that I have.
Yeah.
And what they thought would be cool, wild things to do, to me, was out of the bounds of the franchise.
Well, one of the things that I did like the approach they were taking with is that the message found, or the admonition, wherever that is, that to some, this was a dire warning of doom, but to others, it was, if not a message of hope, then a promise of support.
Yeah, where I think they missed on that, I could see from the organic point of view, it's a, you know, oh my God, this is bad, you know, doomsday prophecy. If it had been from the synthetics point of view, call us, we will accept you, we will safeguard you.
Yes.
Then, okay, I see different sides of the same thing. But that's not what it was. What yeah. it was is we'll come and we'll eradicate everyone.
Yeah.
So it put the Romulans in the position of being right.
Yeah, which I didn't care for.
If it had just been there are two sides to this, what perspective are you seeing it from?
Yeah.
That, I think, would have been a better approach.
Yeah.
And I was half expecting when we had the Romulan fleet and then the Starfleet fleet, which is a bit redundant, but okay, and the portal open. If it hadn't been these crazy tentacle things coming out, but if it had just been a drone, seeing you organics, you're at each other's throats. This is why we want to safeguard your creations from you.
Yeah.
When you're ready, come talk. If it had been something along the lines of classic Trek where the Organians were kind of enforcing the peace between the lesser beings and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or even arguably the Q continuum or something like that. Okay, I can see that. There's precedence for that and that would work.
Well, the funny thing is, to me, this felt almost like somebody watched an episode from The Orville where Isaac's people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and it's funny because I felt, I hadn't put the two together, but I'm glad you mentioned that. I feel in The Orville, when Isaac's people, the reveal happens, which there's some analogies between the two plot lines. It was so well done. And then they circle back on that even at the end of the second season in Orville for, okay, well, what had happened if things had gone another way? It's like, wow, they got some really good story material out of that. Whereas here, it felt like they were almost going into, I mean, to me, the thing that came to mind with that portal was the Battle of New York in Avengers.
Yes. Yes.
Here comes the crazy aliens pouring out and they'll wipe havoc on everything.
Complete with the tentacles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, it seemed like it was going almost more in a horror movie direction, whereas you take a not crazy dissimilar premise or whatever in Orville, and they actually went down, I felt, a very Trek route.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the funny thing to me is if basically a rescue ship had been coming in answer to the beacon, if the rescue ship had only beamed aboard synthetic life.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, poor Soong would have been left behind, which would have been the height of unfair. He would have wanted to go with the synthetic life.
He would have.
And I think they would have wanted him to go with them.
Yeah. I guess to me, the problem was the synthetics were as, for lack of a better term, bigoted.
Mm-hmm.
As some of the organics.
Yeah.
And this all goes back to, didn't we get past this by the point of Star Trek?
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to acknowledge, hey, you're Vulcan, you're Romulan, you're Klingon, you're Cardassian, whatever, or Ferengi. So physiologically, you have certain differences, different medical needs, whatever. But we're all life forms. We're all sentient things.
But as Picard says near the end, he says they were raised in a society of fear.
Right, but they had access to the entire library and literature of the entire Federation and known space. And their synths, they can plow through it instantly. they had time to evolve in the 6.5 minutes or whatever they had at one point, if they had chosen to.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen that episode with Data in Next Gen a few times.
Yes.
So I enjoyed the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I was disappointed in places.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it goes back to the, I like Roddenberry's vision of Trek.
I like a more utopian vision of Trek, which is what Roddenberry had done.
Yeah.
But I want to split the two there, because if you say it's all Roddenberry's vision or whatever, it implies nobody else but Roddenberry might be able to do it.
Well, and I don't mean that. I just mean I want them to look to that original vision of Trek.
Yes.
Instead of constantly trying to put other fingerprints all over it to make it different. And in the process of making it different, veer so far away that, I mean, social commentary is well and good, but when you are so focused on putting the social commentary in that you force it onto the Federation as opposed to those the Federation is having contact with.
I guess I don't see the social commentary of classic Trek or more recently of Orville in most episodes of either Discovery or Picard. In Picard itself, while they're echoing current day trends of essentially xenophobia and stuff like that, those are story elements. I didn't feel it was social commentary with the "and you can get past it beyond" or "you should learn because." There wasn't the moral of the story aspect.
I think the book did better than the series on that, with Romulan space for Romulans.
In so much as calling it out, yes, but in so much as the cautionary tale and here's the moral of the story, I don't think so.
That one I'll have to think on.
There was nothing in these 10 episodes that really harkened back, other than the interview at the beginning, of Romulans in Romulan space, or even Romulans being on Earth, or that whole divide.
When we went and got Elnor.
Yes, you're right. That was the one episode they did.
Yeah.
But it seemed like the Romulans are able to field a fairly good fleet of ships pretty easily.
Yeah.
So how did that happen? I mean, there was aspects of the finale that seemed to almost forget aspects of the story they'd established.
Yeah.
So that was perplexing and frustrating. And again, to your point of certain story elements that had just been tossed out and then dropped, that was a little frustrating.
Yeah.
And I never got a great feel for the total layout of the ship.
No.
The La Serena or whatever, which they rarely used the name of the ship.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell what the ship was designed to do. Cargo ship of some sort, maybe, but it didn't really have a cargo bay, just a big empty interior area. And I didn't dislike the ship, but it didn't feel classic Trek. And the Romulan ship that we had in the two-parter here at the end that was chasing him or whatever, I called it out at one point. It looked like a Cylon Raider from Battlestar Galactica.
I was surprised how much time we spent on a Borg cube.
Yeah, and I don't feel that storyline really wrapped up either.
I don't feel it either wrapped up or really went anywhere.
Well, what they need to do in a second season, having left the cube there with all the ex-Borg, that's the halfway point between synthetic and biological.
Yes.
Something has to come of that.
Yeah. Well, I would love for the XBs to kind of teach the synthetic how to be more, if human is not the right term, then more organic. But to have the synthetics teach the XBs how to embrace what is still in them that couldn't be removed of the Borg tech and to accept themselves completely.
I think both sides could teach the other something. And I think the synthetics could be providing them implants and whatnot that make them look more organic.
Yeah.
And really rehabilitate them as they, you know, help the organics embrace emotion or humanity or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But I didn't get the feeling at the end of the season that's where they were going to go.
No, I think that planet's been left behind, and that whole story is to be left to either comics or a book.
Novels, I would expect, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was disappointed with that, but honestly, I was disappointed with the ending of the show because it ended on essentially, I mean, they killed off a few characters And then they ended on the deaths of a few characters.
Yeah.
And then did, I don't want to say a let's have a bright happy ending, but they wallowed too much in the death aspect for one character, did almost a mini holodeck little adventure for a little bit to set up the death of another character, so we can then pretend to have a nice happy ending at the end.
Yeah.
It felt like they wanted to have their cake and eat it too, and it's like, again, I enjoyed the scenes.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy the type of story they were trying to tell because I felt it was ill-conceived. It's one of those things that I think that it was a very, well, I was going to say it was a very good execution of a bad story, but that's not true because I think parts of the story were good and poorly executed, and I think parts of them were well executed and bad. It was a really, it was a mishmash.
Well, the arc for Picard as a person seemed to be simply breathing and surviving isn't enough. You need to be
He's
got to
get out of his funk and get back out there and be Picard.
You know?
I think his arc is summed up by the advice he was given right before doing the interview. Go be the captain they remember and deserve.
Yes.
That was his arc.
Yes.
I'd be hard-pressed to name much of an arc for almost any of the other characters, though.
Well, but I think Raffi's arc was about the same. I mean, captain's probably not the right rank, but...
But yeah, I see what you're saying. Well, you could argue the same thing for Rios.
Yes.
Basically, go back to who you were. If you use that as the arc, it fits for Jurati.
Yeah.
You could argue 7 of 9.
Yeah.
But definitely Rios.
I mean, really what we're saying in and using captain or rank or whatever, it's really go be the best you ever were that they remember.
Get out of the doldrums or whatever you're in and go be your best self.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel that there were kind of the parallels between the journeys or the differences between the journeys. It's one of those, I think if we look for the character arc, we're struggling to say, well, I guess it was all this.
Well, I mean, Elnor thought he couldn't be, what are they called? The lady nuns, warrior nuns. Because he's not a woman. But when he recognized that really what defines them is someone who's willing to fight to the death for a lost cause, and he decided to take on Picard's lost cause that had no hope.
Until he found more hopeless causes, yes.
Yes, which was really quite funny.
He was a good character.
You know, but that was what picked him up out of kind of sulking about he could never be what he wanted to be because he was a man living in a women's world.
Yeah, I guess where they kind of stumbled on all of this is to consider those arcs, I think, is fair, but a little bit of a stretch and giving them more credit than they're due.
I won't disagree.
And then I feel they went to, okay, here's the arc up until that character death near the end. And then you've got a complete 180 on a lot of this stuff in the last, 10 minutes of the show to get to that nice happy ending where we've got the lineup on the bridge and let's go. And that's where I think they totally undercut any kind of character arcs they were doing. Because there's an aspect of that lineup there at the end. It's as if most, I don't say as if the season hadn't happened, but I mean, Rios doesn't seem radically different than if he had just been hired to have this crew. You know, if we'd picked up 7 of 9 from where she was presumably at the beginning of the season, you know?
Jurati is different. I'm not sure I can put it into words, but the journey has changed her.
Oh, the journey's changed her, but she's gone from having a mind meld of horrific stuff forced upon her, killing somebody, you know, doing a bunch of things like that. Events have changed her. I don't know if I'd say she's grown as a character. She's changed as a character.
Yes. Raffi is more sober in terms of sobriety. That's about the only change I see in that character.
But again, they went back and forth on what is her motivation on doing things.
Yeah.
And I could not answer the question as to what is her motivation for staying on the ship here at the end. Not saying I think she should have stayed on the planet.
No, but I think her motivation is basically this is the closest thing she has to a family. And having something close to a family is worth staying sober for.
I'll agree with that. I just don't feel they earned the sobriety. I think it just happened.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the show kind of fell apart. Certain things just happened.
Yeah.
the little kind of quasi-holodeckish thing we had there at the end was hinted at and alluded to, well, I guess. But it just thump, here it is suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I felt they could have set the seeds for that a little better and earned it to where, well, of course.
Yeah.
So, and it was undercut by the dream sequences. It was undercut by the dream sequences in the first episode that were supposed to set the stage for it, I guess.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
So, I'm not saying avoid it. I think it's a fun show. It's nice having Picard back. It's as a character. We got to see a number of other characters that we're familiar with and stuff. I'd like to see more of them in a second season.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it. I like Star Trek. But there were parts of this with the profanity and a few other things where they veered away from what I like about Trek.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh, I love the profanity-free aspect. No, it's just that we're better people.
Yeah.
And here, we were not.
Yeah. I like the hope of Trek.
The we can do better, we can be better, we are better, we're just not there yet.
Yeah.
That's what I think they've lost sight of.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the Orville embraces the imperfection of humanity with the desire to be better and the intermixing of really fun social commentary
mm-hmm.
that Seth MacFarlane has just such a keen grasp of what Trek could be and should be and is running with it and having fun with it in his own universe, whereas here they've almost gotten a little full of themselves.
Yeah.
Again, they're doing good work, but if you're looking for classic Trek social commentary, go elsewhere. If you're looking for long-form narratives in the Trek universe, there's plenty to be had.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, it's not bad. It's good acting. It's just slow and long.
Yeah. And I have no idea what they would do with the second season.
Yeah, that'll be interesting because I still have questions they didn't answer this season.
Agreed. Same here, but not in a that's another 10 episode arc.
I agree. Yeah.
And I don't feel they had an exit strategy as to, but we still got to deal with this.
Yeah, I agree.
So they've got a second season coming eventually. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.